This morning, we're very grateful to have Mike Vilke here to give us a talk. Mike is the chairman of the board of directors of Greater Boston Zen Center, has been very involved with leadership in Bound to Sway Zen at the school level as well, has been a practice leader at our sessions, is the practice leader of the Wednesday night group here at the center, and has led a group at Newton North High School for quite some time. Thank you.
I hadn't realized all the things I was doing. I feel tired. No, I'm just kidding. This morning I'm sitting here with a complex kind of array of feelings. The first thing that I want to say is that it's a real incredible kind of experience, privilege, to be able to be with you this morning. With a full heart, I come here this morning, and I'm just sort of soaking in this kind of gratitude of feeling held in this sangha, and in holding this sangha as well in my heart. I also have. This has been a big week for me in a few senses, and not just for me, for so many of us, each of us with our stories about what has happened to people we love. And some of the stories so beautiful, births, the joy of parenthood, and some of them sad. Potential losses, scares, actual losses. And we have this practice of coming and sitting and being with everything as it's unfolding in our lives, in our hearts, and of sharing in that unfolding with one another in a very intimate way, often without words, and yet still so profoundly intimate. A real paradox that one of the most intimate endeavors we can do in our lives is to be silent and be with one another. So I share with you this morning thoughts that are no thoughts. We come together, and having chanted the Heart Sutra, we learn the word no, and that word haunts us, and we wonder, what does that mean? No birth, no death, no suffering. Is that my life? What is this emptiness that we read and chant about? A topic in Dharma talks which I've shied away from in the past and which is impossible to describe in some senses. And still, it is part of our Dharma and an important part. But what I want to say today is that it is not the most essential part of our Dharma. So, for me, the word emptiness denotes a non-essence, a non-essence to all that is, a quality of ephemerality, impermanence, even transparency in some sense, of all arisings, a quality of everything fluidly passing through this point in time that we name now, and a sense that there's nothing that we can hold on to. This can lead, this insight, this rather than it feeling just like an intellectual exercise, the insight into the quality of our lives is indeed transformative. It does, in fact, give us at least a bit more of a sense of fearlessness, that whatever arises, we can be with it, because it has a fluidity to it. And so the fear of things being like this forever in itself is changing. And in seeing that, there is some kind of freedom. And to become attached to that particular insight and perspective is a kind of deadening. It itself is a fluid experience, a fluid perspective that comes and goes. And even though all things are essentially empty, it doesn't mean that we are always seeing that all things are essentially empty. We do not need to be conscious of this for it to be true. It is not a state of mind that we are trying to attain and hold on to. It's just a description. That's all. There's a story, some of you undoubtedly have read it, with, you know, certain mystical passages in it that seem more and more irrelevant to me in time, but with some real wisdom woven in by Hermann Hesse, called Siddhartha, which is not actually about the Buddha, but about a man who is on a path and is filled with arrogance and attachment through the early stages of his life. I can relate. And he lives a life of detachment, detached from his own body and senses. He becomes an ascetic for a period of time and really tries to remove himself from the world. He then joins into the life of the world, becoming a merchant and gambler and lover, and always with a kind of distance, a protective shell that he's not even aware of himself. But he really doesn't care about the life that he's living, most fundamentally, because he's trying to be detached. Because he has some image of himself as above the world in some way. And when we translate emptiness into this kind of detachment, like, oh, those are just feelings. Oh, it's just, you know, the loss of a loved one. There's a kind of inhumanity to it and falseness to it. And deep down inside, we're weeping and we can't feel it. and it hurts even more. Siddhartha has a son that he doesn't know about who returns into his life and draws him back in to love uncontrollably in love with his child. The Dalai Lama said that detachment is not removal, but is the love a parent has for his or her child. It is the love we have for our parents. That is detachment. That is emptiness. We do not have to separate at all. We do not have to be aware that that is emptiness for it to be emptiness. And so we can forget all about emptiness. It's a word. I lost a dear friend this week. He was killed in Libya on 9/11. He was my best friend in high school. His name was Glenn Doherty. Glenn was and is a profound inspiration to everyone who knew him. There are some people where one has the maybe vague sense in a kind of cruel way that the things that are said are maybe melodramatic or not long-standing feelings about someone spoken out of immediate grief rather than out of truth or things like that. But in listening to all of Glenn's friends speak about him, every single person genuinely said, Glenn was my best friend. Because at some point in life, we all felt like he was giving us such loving attention. The kind of attention that he could only give to his best friend. He had such a big, caring heart. And he would go across the world. He was a medic, a Navy SEAL trained medic. There is nobody in whose arms I would rather be if I were wounded or maybe even dying. Because his eyes were filled with such tenderness and compassion and love. And in losing Glenn, though most in this room probably did not know him. We've all lost something in this world that we all have in some way indirectly been affected by. He had a bodhisattva heart, even though he was not a Buddhist, even though he did not know the word emptiness. He lived with love. I've been reflecting over the last year, really, as we all do, really reflecting on what is this practice? What are we doing here when we come together and we sit? Why are we here? And for me, something has been emerging. A practice that I can never do as completely or as well as other people, perhaps. I feel that way when I think about Glenn. And still, to me, it seems at the heart of this endeavor, and that we can set as an intention, not just detachment, not just insight, personal insight into emptiness and form, but the practice of caring. The practice of caring for all beings, including ourselves. Yes, including our own broken hearts, our own tenderness, our own personal heartbreak and hope. To care for all the people who are sad and are wounded in this world. To set that as an intention at which we constantly fail. And to care for our shame at having failed. That itself is atonement. That compassionate care for our own shame, brokenness, broken to the very bottom, to care for that. To attentively care for all beings in the same way that we care for our own brokenness. To realize that everybody is experiencing the same types of gains and losses in this life, as we do. The dedications this morning were something that rang out like church bells across the land and into space. The pathos with which we chanted them this morning really struck me. I felt the power of why we're here. We remember you who cared for us and are gone, you who are ill, you who are at war, you who are hungry and who are in pain. May you heal and have peace. We dedicate our merits, the merits of all practice, of all practices, to all members of our human family throughout space and time. We especially dedicate their merits to those who suffer as a result of calamity, cruelty, and war. May we realize the Buddha way together. Nobody left behind, not a single being. Nobody shut out of our hearts. Caring for all beings. For me, this is the call. This is why we're here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Please sit comfortably. We'll have an opportunity to make comments or ask questions.
I've been struggling with in my own practice is, and in my line of work, I see a lot of suffering and death very, in a very kind of realistic, upfront, or right in my face sort of way. And my reaction to it has often been that this is happening to them, and this is not my path. This is not the thing that I am going to have to deal with someday. This is someone else's problem. And as I've sat with that and thought about, and what has been very, obviously very clear, is that there is no escaping that same path. It's that path of being a human being. And that's been extraordinarily, and for me that's become an interesting Dharma gate in a way. On one hand, extraordinarily terrifying, full of dismay and sadness for me that, oh, in fact, I'm going to have to face those same things. But I think an undercurrent that I've discovered as I've sat with that in my practice is that actually that is the deep, a source of, it is the wellspring of an infinite compassion. That in fact, being in the same boat as everyone else, that's the, and really no escape from those things. It is an incredible opportunity to open the heart to everything that I encounter. And so that's what arose for me when I was thinking about what you're talking about.
I think that that for me, my answer would be by not worrying about emptiness and by not worrying about a detachment. by trusting in the natural response of your heart to your life, and to the people in your life, and to pay attention, because it's fleeting. We don't have to make things empty. They are. And that's why they keep disappearing on us and arising. So there's nothing that we have to do to create emptiness, or it's unfolding. So I think the full engagement in your life is our call to practice.
So, when I think of attachment, I like to think of attachment to things for ourselves. So, for me, what we're talking about is greed on the one hand, wanting things, being attached to feeling a certain way, having certain things, and also the other side of that, which is not wanting things, which is anger. Being attached to getting my own way and pushing away anything that doesn't meet that thing that I want. So when we talk about detachment, for me, we're talking about that, okay? The self, okay? These selfish desires, these poisons that we talk about in Buddhism of greed, anger, and ignorance. Okay? Detaching from those. So it's actually being able to detach from those things is actually improving our intimacy with the world. Rather than being so concerned with what we want and what we don't want, it's being with the actual situation as it is in this moment. And I think that's where this emptiness comes in as well. Instead of using the word emptiness, I like to use the word boundless. Okay? So that what we're saying is that things don't exist as self-contained individuals in quite the way that we normally think. Things are actually boundless, and everything is related to everything else. So when we say that this floor is empty, we're not saying I could put my fist through it. You know, it's clearly there, floor. Okay, but it's empty in the sense that it's boundless. It's a part of the whole. So in the same way, our relationships with the world. Realizing that you are not, in some deepest sense, you are not separate from me, that we both share this true self. You know, we have this small self, this ego that we carry around with us and is always, plotting ways to get things and to get away from things. But at a deeper level, we have this true self that is common between both you and me. That's the boundlessness, that's the emptiness that we're talking about here.
See, I would use the word attachment to describe what Steve just described. We're all attached to each other, we're all connected, and this is the healthy, positive form of attachment that I learned about when I had a daughter. And when you have kids, you got to be attached to them. They don't thrive if you're not, and they don't do well. And we're all attached to each other in a way. I think part of what we're doing is we're trying to shoehorn concepts into an English word, which doesn't fit. So what do you guys think about the language we're using here and how we're trying to describe things? Because I feel it's inadequate.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
All language is inadequate, and whatever you say is wrong to some extent. So as soon as you say one thing, you need to turn and appreciate the opposite as well. So normally we use the word connected for what it is that we're talking about there. But yes, in the normal sense of the word, attached works just as well. But it's the it's two different things we're talking about there.
What came up for me when I and I heard your question to Ron, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and I heard your question, Ron, was, you know, this very human natural desire to, as Steve put it, to want to push things away, and Patrick talked about that too, you know, push away the things that don't feel good, or that are painful, and people we love are sick, or they die, or, and, you know, people do stuff that makes us really angry, you know, there are all these feelings that come up, and what came up for me was a teaching and an experience that I had that demonstrated that teaching really well to me was, you know, the teaching that I've learned in this practice is that no need to push anything away. That being right with you in the moment, you know, anger arises. And not to say, the other part of this teaching I've learned is not to say that I've expressed that anger or hurt someone else with that anger. Just for me to be intimate with what's coming up for me. And an experience that I had that demonstrated this really well for me was I was on an extended retreat. It was either a 3-day or a 7-day, I'm not sure which one it was. And a lot of anger was coming up for me. And I was so angry. And what's fantastic about retreat is the container that holds us and the things that we do, which is we vow to be silent. And we vow not to look at people, and we vow to be still, and all the things that we do here. And what was amazing for me was to be able to be that angry for that many days, because it wasn't just like it lasted for 5 minutes and then it was gone. I'm telling you that I was mad, and I was mad for multiple days in a row. And I was really, really, found myself being really grateful that it was a silent retreat. Because I would have harmed people, and I would have harmed myself if I had been able to speak. And the other thing that was totally amazing for me was to be able to just be with that anger and not have to do anything about it and not have to do anything with it. I didn't have to speak out. I didn't have to throw anything. I did, you know, whatever things you want to do with all that much anger, right? I didn't have to do any of them. I could just sit on my cushion and be with it. And it was an amazing teaching. It was the teaching of this practice. That was my life right then, in those moments when I was furious. And I didn't have to do anything. Just like when I sit on the cushion and I think, oh my foot is itching. But it's like, I don't have to move. I don't have to scratch it. And that freedom that comes from that spaciousness that comes means I really get to live my life. And I'll just share one thing that, you know, I went in to see one of the teachers and I said, you know. And I heard, and one of the best things the teacher shared with me, you know, was really a lesson that I've taken in and carried with me is, you know, good to get to know it, you know. It will come again. You know, because even if it goes, it will come again. It's not like I have to get rid of these things. Thank goodness, you know, I don't want to get rid of my humanity. And I'm also just going to vow to avoid harm. You know, and so when the anger comes, you know, the more practice I have with anger coming, and seeing it and feeling it and saying, okay. And yes, sometimes action is appropriate. This isn't to just say, oh yeah, I'm just going to sit here and I'm just going to not do anything. If action is required, then I get to choose which action is required. But it's that kind of intimacy with my life, even, you know, being with people I love who are very sick right now, being with people that I love that are, you know, old age and sickness is overtaking them. and I'm seeing and watching. It's painful. But getting to be able to be with it. And I find that in my being able to be with it, I can more fully be with them. What a gift.
Well, thank you for sharing with us this morning your loss and everything you've shared. I enjoyed what you shared from the Dalai Lama. To paraphrase, perhaps your paraphrasing of him, that to dive into, for example, love, deep love of another person is detachment. And that hit me right here because that is, it feels like you're attaching, but you're detaching from your little self,
yes.
From your ego. You're detaching from you, mm-hmm. and your love for another person. So thank you.
Yeah, and it's like a detachment from the protective shell. I'm going to, you know, that like protective place, you know, I'm scared for me. Fear is a big one. I'm scared of being rejected. I'm scared of the pain that's going to come with this kind of overwhelming love. The knowledge of inevitable loss, you know, all of that can really stir the heart to like incredible life. And, you know, so, you know, this detaching is also, like, so vibrant. There's such a vibrancy to it, you know, to enter into relationship in an open-hearted way, you know. And so, yes, you know, I like how you put that. Thank you. Thank you all.